I think I should begin by a little explanation for those friends that I've bumped into here, also to those who may have some dim recollections of meetings before I start growing the bush under my nose, that it's not, you know, just a whim. It's by deliberate design, primarily because of the fact that this year, after 2 years of exploratory ministry in the Dallas area, I was given instructions to show something visible in my project. And now I'm hung with it for a while anyway. I haven't figured out the legal ramifications of all of this, but Texas went on a big driver's license kick where you've got to go through the eye chart business, you know, and I was able to read E every time with my glasses off. And then they take your picture in color. And I'm hung now with an ID picture that's got this on. And in Texas, where you've got a real skeptical attitude toward checks, you know, they like that real green Yankee dollar rather than personal checks. You got to show your ID, driver's license, in order to cash checks anywhere if you're that lucky. And I don't know exactly what's all going to be involved when I get to the point someday and start shaving and forget that the thing is there by design and whack it off. But I'll work on that as we go along, like with the other problems. I wanted to touch on some of the background of the Dallas Urban Team Ministry, DUTM, that I feel privileged to work in. The thing started when I came to Dallas about 2 years and 4 months ago under a synodical pilot project to do something in the Oak Lawn area, primarily with the young adults living in apartments. The Oak Lawn area has undergone a tremendous sociological change in the last decade in that the apartment complexes, which are not like St. Louis apartments or Chicago apartments, but is peculiar primarily to the Southwest, the garden type apartments, which is quite a different breed of cat, really, and constitutes quite a different set of people than I think many I want to think of in terms of apartment people. An apartment is not necessarily an apartment in the sense that you may think of it or have a concept of it as of now, because the apartment scene in Dallas, in the garden type apartments particularly, is very diverse, and I'll be going into that to show you some of the diversity and to try to sketch for you some of the areas that we attempt to serve. At any rate, the first year was an exploratory ministry in which I was supposed to find what the problems were, what the needs were, and then also begin to explore certain areas in which the church could engage in a ministry with the young adults primarily. The young adult concentration in the garden type apartments is very heavy. And the Dallas area is an attraction for young adults, primarily because of the vocational and occupational advantages. It's a marketing area, not an industrial area. You have a lot of insurance companies having their base there. You have a lot of the marketing companies that need, of course, a lot of the junior execs and secretaries. You have huge hospital complexes and training centers, which means your nurses and interns and doctors are going to be grouping together. It's also an airline center, which again means that you're going to have a lot of young adults connected with the airline, the stewardesses and pilots and ground crew people. And then, simply by virtue of the fact that you have an already large grouping of young adults there because of vocational and occupational reasons, young adults will attract other young adults, and that's good enough reason for anybody coming to Dallas. The idea then of evaluating this consumed about the first year, and I moved about real freely because it was a beautiful setup in that Synod funded the project. And I was supposed to be administered then by the Texas District Mission Board out of Austin, which is about 250 miles away from Dallas. And it was the last year of Papa Rast, who had been serving as mission director of the Texas District for a goodly number of years, In fact, he was my mission director when I was there for my first parish in Rosebud some 17 years before. But it was his last year, and he was very warmly concerned, very interested, but obviously, with the last year, was not going to become real involved in the whole business. After the first year, I was out dove hunting on member of the board's ranch, and he happened to be there also doing some hunting. And across the stock tank, you know, the place where they dam up a little creek or something to give the cattle a place for water, when he saw me coming with shotgun and all, he yelled across, "Hey, did you hear? You're fired." Said something about Synod firing me, but that the Texas District was going to be kind enough to hire me and keep the project alive. This is how I got word of Synod's economy binge, where the special ministries, you know, were chopped off of the budget, and the theology behind this was that, after all, the districts are Synod. So all of the special ministries, with a few notable exceptions, reverted then to district control, causing some real fears, primarily because I don't see this as being a work that can afford to become provincial or parochial. I think this is one of the great failures of our church, that when we engage in special ministries like this, we've got a tendency to serve an area and feel that if we do this, that we've done the job, rather than to also feel that there is an obligation beyond this into the church. At any rate, the work at this point gelled in association with four other special ministers, two Methodists and two Presbyterians. And we sort of fell together by virtue of the fact that we were, each one of us, engaged in some area of special ministry, directed toward the young adults or directed toward the apartment areas particularly. And this was the start then of the Dallas Urban Team Ministry, which has been a real beautiful thing as far as I'm concerned in providing a good ecumenical center. Because I think it becomes very obvious due to the complexity of the scene and the problems that are involved, due to the need for a power base that one man or one church cannot provide, that you have this kind of an arrangement. It was not done by design. By this I mean I did not, first of all, secure the permission and approval of the Texas District to work things this way, nor did any of the other men secure the prior approval of their administrative boards. We felt the need was there, and we began working together. And this has then provided the base for a number of things that I think are real significant. But let me back up now to the apartment scene and try to give you an idea of how this whole business works. This is the Trinity River, which goes through Dallas. South Dallas is an area that is primarily Negro, a great big ghetto. West Dallas is primarily Latin American. This quadrant of the city is the Oak Lawn area, and runs all the way from the downtown area of Dallas out to Love Field. Love Field, by the way, is named after some obscure lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force who piled up, and I don't know of anybody who's found the rationale for naming this thing after it, but that's it anyway. And in this area now, you've got the tremendous apartment development around the city. In the suburbs, you also have large areas of apartments developing. These are a little bit different in character, and I'm going to try to break this down. This is fashionable North Dallas and East Dallas. Nice people live here. And in this area, you've got the beginning of a real strong ghetto situation, and then slum areas. In the apartment scene now, when I said you don't necessarily think of the apartment, period, and have one concept of the apartment, but that rather you wind up with an animal that has varied descriptions. In this area, for example, close to the downtown area, you have the rooming house type of apartment. When the kids come into Dallas, and most of them come from a 200-mile radius of Dallas, this is usually the place where they hit in order to get located, stay for 6 weeks. It's low rent, very open as far as the housing is concerned, although it is segregated. And you have the first step usually here, with the result that you've got a real conglomeration of people here, usually real young, 17, 18, 19-year-olds. And their goal is to get a job, become established, and move out to the next area. This would sort of be characterized by the McKinney Street area, which is one flop house after another, one little rooming house after another, up to the Gaston Avenue area, which is known as a pretty wild and wide open place. Here you have apartments that are older. They were started about 10 years ago, and they've been sold off two or three times so that the initial investors have gotten their money out of it. And in the chain now of economics with apartments, those who presently own them are interested, you know, in making a buck out of it, which means that they have to be quite permissive in their management, which means they can't have a manager who throws out too many tenants because they're bouncing beer cans or running into each other's apartments. They have to be quite permissive and rent just about to anybody with the color line still very dramatically observed, however. After this, when people get tired, you know, of finding out how many bottles they can knock off and how many beds they can bounce in a week, you sort of reach a saturation point on that, and you start getting higher aspirations. You move out to the Cedar Spring area, which is sort of between the real wild and wide open area and the area of the sophisticates. The Cedar Spring area is the swinger area. Nice people who are there to live, to work, and yet at the same time have a few other concerns than these little whims, you know, and fancies, but are beginning to really start searching for some meaning to the whole business of life and some purpose for their existence beyond putting in an 8-hour day and spending the next 12 hours in your other pursuits. After this group, the next stage would be to the sophisticates, the area where you've pretty well got it made as far as your occupation is concerned. You're pretty well established. You usually have a pretty good job, you know, and are beginning to really appreciate life and some of the finer things in life. You're pretty well settled, too, as far as your lifestyle is concerned. You're pretty well gelled. You're pretty independent. So that this poses a real difficult, for me at least, a real difficult people, group of people to try to deal with just because of these factors. There are also other apartment groupings, primarily on the north northwest side. You have young families, apartments given to housing, husband and wife, and maybe one or two small kids. You do have a few major apartment developments that cater to families, but not in these areas. They're usually on the outskirts and on the south end of town. Okay, you've got all of these segments now of people, each of whom has a pretty distinctive lifestyle, and each of whom has a rather distinctive set of needs that I think the church ought to be aware of. But now this is complicated by the fact that it does not remain static. That in the 2 years that I've been there already, we can see the Gaston Avenue area changing. The Gaston Avenue area is gradually moving up into the Cedar Spring area. The Cedar Spring area apartments are changing hands. The management that once tried to hold the line as far as protecting and preserving decent decor and appearance, you know, and behavior. This is gradually becoming economically not feasible anymore, and for that reason you have these places opening up a little bit more. You also then have other subcultures that complicate things alongside of these and alongside of the change that's going on in here continuously, in that you have subcultures surfacing. So that, for example, you've got the hippie group and influx. You've got your homophile community, which in Dallas is quite large, and in the area that's dominated by a very heavy Baptist Protestant ethic. It's you try to sweep things like this under the rug and sort of make believe that they aren't there, but the police records indicate that there are 25,000 known male homosexuals in Dallas. Known, God knows how many are not known to the police, and God only knows again how many lesbians there are. We've got a little bit of a double standard here in society as far as male and female homosexuality is concerned. You've got your drug culture, which may or may not be related to the hippie bit. You've got a big student population, and that's broken down into the resident students and the off-campus students, so that these groups appear, you know, down in here and over in here and in here, and plastic hippies out in there, where you've got your technocrats who have real fine jobs, IBM programmers, real straight lives, 5 days a week, and then on weekends forsake the nice apartment and go down to the square in the heart of downtown or over at the Lee Park and have a little love-in or a human be-in or something like this that sort of puts a little spice in life, you know, and breaks the old restrictions and gets out of the bag. Now, with this whole business of a real complex groupings of people, my job, as I see it, is to try to be a bridge between the straight world and the apartment world, between the various subcultures that I think are significant, because if you take a look at the young adult population in a pyramid sort of thing, here you've got the losers, here you've got your big middle, and here you've got all of these things, plus who knows how many more, the radicals, the new left, the SDS and resistance movements, and all of these that are beginning to surface up in here. And these people in the great middle are directed in an upward movement. In other words, this top that surfaces here does have an effect back down here, and these people, it seems, catch on to some things and appropriate some of the things that are surfacing here, so that the draft resistance movement, which is condemned per se in Dallas, Congressman Joe Poole came down and personally closed up the resistance office and found a real neat place to hang a commie label, which ought to be worth a few votes from the Birchers and the right wing in Dallas. Nevertheless, the resistance is still alive, even though the office is closed up. There was this Jewish guy who had his son come to him and say, "Dad, my bar mitzvah is coming up." That's a Jewish confirmation, you know. "And for my bar mitzvah gift, I'd like to have a Honda." And the father, you know, wasn't quite with it. Because he'd worked hard all his life and kept his nose to the grindstone, and between the clothing business and home, he had all he could do to keep up with. And so he wasn't real hip on some of the things, you know, that is common parlance today, and he didn't exactly know what a Honda was. So he went to his rabbi and said, "My boy for his bar mitzvah says he wants a Honda. What do you think?" And the Orthodox rabbi wasn't with it any more than the father, and he said, "Well, it sounds Jewish, but I really don't know if that would be something suitable. Tell you what, there's a Reformed rabbi just a little way down the block. I'm sure he'd know whether this would be acceptable or not, so let's check with him." They walked down there, and just as they were getting up to this place, the Reformed rabbi came tooling out of the driveway in an XKE, you know, and hit the brakes and said, "Hi, what can I do for you?" The Orthodox rabbi said, "Well, this member of mine here has a son who's going to have his bar mitzvah, and the boy said he wants a Honda. Do you think that's okay?" And the former rabbi said, "Well, yeah, I would say it's a, you people don't know what a Honda is, do you?" And they had to admit, "No, we don't really know." And he said, "Well, it's a motorcycle, you know." And real fine. That'd be a real fine gift for a bar mitzvah. Every kid ought to have a Honda, you know. And with that, he shifted gears and tooled off down the street. And as he was going from second to third, he said to himself, "You know, I wonder what the hell is a bar mitzvah." Now, I cite this deliberately to try to illustrate what I consider to be my position. I don't want to forget what a Honda is. Neither do I want to forget what a bar mitzvah is. I don't want to forget what our church is, nor do I want to forget what the world is. I want to try to assume and live in that uncomfortable position that was so described so picturesquely that I think I'll remember it for a long time, about the guy with both feet on either side of the fence, you know, neither one of which touches the ground. Oh, beautiful. I'm wondering why he's hurting. Now I know why I'm hurting. I'm glad I came. And I think this is exactly what we need for the Dallas area and for this kind of work, because this is a different world. It's a world that's real new to me. I thought I had a rather earthy ministry, a ministry, you know, that was at least fairly alive and kept touch with a few things, because I have been known in the Milwaukee area to go into a beer stube here and there. And I didn't think I was completely detached from life. And yet I find, after getting into some of the extreme subcultures that do have a relevance to our young adult culture in general, that it is a pretty new and wild and exciting world. Dealing with our hippies, dealing with the drug culture, dealing with the homophile community, all of this I think has been very beneficial to me. I should explain that in the Dallas Urban Team Ministry, we have deliberately helped each other to cultivate bases of operation. So that one of the Presbyterian men, for example, worked with establishing contacts in the hippie community. We have now a hippie house in Dallas. If you're ever around, if you get within 6 blocks of it, you'll know it's there because it vibrates. It's painted harvest gold and pumpkin orange. And it's an old converted 3-story funeral home. We have 6 urns of ashes up in the attic if anybody's missing an uncle or something. Death masks with sunglasses and cigarettes stuck in the mouth. And this is a place for the arts. It's a place for the arty young person, and a place that's gotten to be kind of hippie. We have regular light shows that sometimes are used for worship. We have all of the arts, sculpture, watercolor, oils. We have a ballet corps, interpretive dancing. We've got a theater group and a number of different things. This has come out of the contacts that we have deliberately cultivated, because in doing this and establishing a link with a subculture like this, we can come to know these people, they can come to know us, and we can begin to see the signs of their influence in the great middle. It's the same with the homophile community. We've established a link through our San Francisco trip about a year ago, where we put an ad in one of the publications of Sir, which is a homosexual magazine printed in San Francisco, that any of the gay people desiring to make contacts with religious people in Dallas, write to box so-and-so. We got three responding letters, and these were our initial contacts for the establishing of the Circle of Friends. They picked the name. And we found these to be very valuable contacts. And all the way through now, we're trying to develop these primary contacts, feeling that this is the real way, you know, to know what's going on and to be able to relate and have others relate to you. This is also a valuable tool that we have used in our work with established congregations, which has been quite limited, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, because our congregations in Dallas are nowhere near the Oak Lawn area. We ring the city with our congregations. We've got one down here near Fair Park in the Negro area, but we don't have any congregations, really, where we've got some 200,000 people in the north section of Dallas. And the relationship between my work and the congregations is rather tenuous at times, I'll have to admit. But we have been doing at least this. to try to get our church people, as well as our people in positions of civic and community responsibility, law enforcement, education, medicine, ministry, the whole works, involved in some of these things by having what we call exposure tours. The last one we had was for 11 sessions, and it took some 40 hours of time, and we socked each participant $25. And it consisted of this, that on a Sunday afternoon usually, we'd have the indoctrination of the area that we were going to consider. For example, we started off with our homophile community, and we had a couple of gay fellows from our circle of friends coming in to talk to the group. That following Thursday then, we had the real exposure scene, where we had six gay fellows acting as guides, taking this group of people into the homosexual bars of Dallas, even taking them to a Valentine's Day party, which was a real sight to behold. They had four drag queens there, which just about blew the minds of some of our real staid people who maybe had read about this, you know, in some of the literature, some allusions to it anyway, and now we're seeing it for the first time in real life, and then had the opportunity to sit down and talk, you know, with professed homosexuals. The same with the hippie house. In one weekend, we had 600 people going through Satori. Ozymandias, a student center, is also another base where we work with the junior college kids at El Centro, a downtown campus, non-resident students. So out of this association with the team ministry has come a number of projects. We did not consider our role to be that of getting a project going and then continuing it, but rather of being initiators in the areas where there was a need and where we felt we could in some way minister to that need. And then to start it off, to provide some warm bodies, to get the thing going, and then hope to sell it somewhere along the line to some sponsoring body. So that the Presbyterians have taken over Satori House. We now have the Council of Churches of Dallas, the local council, taking over Ozymandias, the student center. And we're working on a council of religion and the homosexual to take over in this area and develop these areas. I think I better put a period here before I wear out my welcome.